This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking now about cybersecurity. How do nations and businesses guard against cyber attacks? And how can you be sure the private information you put online stays private? Joining me today are head of the Political Science Department at the University of Cincinnati, Richard Harknett, and University of Cincinnati Associate Professor Information Technology, Mark Stockman. You can join the discussion by calling 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi there.
I think a place I'd like to start would be to talk about the whole cybersecurity and cyber attacks and how big they are and how prevalent they are.
Well, it depends on how you define cyber attack is one way of looking at it.
Define it for us.
Okay. So it's an intrusion, an unauthorized intrusion into a computer system. Right, would be the simplest way of defining it. So the Pentagon, for example, is getting about 250,000 attacks on a daily basis. So if you ask how prevalent that is that a prevalent number?
Well, how successful are of that number? How many are successful?
Right. A large measure get into some layer, but most of it is not successful. But of course, you're looking at a risk-reward structure when we're talking at the national level, right? So if you can get into very secure systems, there's a big reward at the end of that. So, for example, the main concern right now in the defense area is subcontractors and contractors within the defense industrial sector, right? And the research and development that is done on new weapon systems and things of that nature. And the loss of intellectual property from those research and development plans and programs that other nations can then leapfrog all of the costs on the research side, right, and the development side, and get to a level of sophistication in counter weaponry and things of that nature that, you know, the United States has spent billions and billions of dollars on and years of research to try to get to.
And there's also, if you look at more of the individual or the corporate world, of course, by the nature of being connected, we open ourselves up for some kind of attack or, you know, unauthorized entry. And so just by putting servers up that where we want users to come and buy our products on websites, or just by connecting ourselves to the internet, we open ourselves up to potentially, you know, having unauthorized access by hackers or even by automated systems where hackers will go out just looking for open holes in networks that they can exploit to get personal data, to get credit card numbers, usernames, passwords, and things like that.
We know, and we'll talk more about the personal data and those sorts of things. What about bigger picture when it comes to governmental data or companies' private information on the internet? Maybe, Mark, you can take that a little bit further and say what it means in terms of the bigger picture.
Well, sure. I mean, so everything, we'd like to have all of our systems connected so they can communicate together, so we can easily manage them and remotely control them. So we like to have this capability, and as such, we, you know, the companies and our nations and our government entities open themselves up for, you know, attack and scans. So in these companies and these organizations have our individual user data stored. They have, you know, they give the ability for hackers to come and take down systems, to deface websites, to really, you know, perform what we like to call denial of service attack, where the companies or the organizations have to spend time that they should be spending elsewhere to get the servers and the systems back up and running again.
Richard?
If you ask General Alexander, who heads up U.S. Cyber Command, who also has been in the news because he heads up National Security Agency, and that's a whole other issue of cybersecurity. But on the U.S. Cyber Command side, if you ask him what's the main focus of concern with regarding to cybersecurity threats, he'll say it's the loss of intellectual property. And that's kind of surprising, right, when you think about the main military organization set up to defend our digital space. They're not worried about military attack, right? He's looking at this from a grand strategy standpoint. Again, what I mentioned earlier about the research and development side. But our private companies, their exposure and loss of competitive advantage, when we look globally and what makes the United States distinctive, right, a large measure of it is our economic power, not our military power, our economic power, and our ability to innovate. And so the degree that we remain cyber insecure, cyber vulnerable, that comparative advantage around the world starts to shrink.
Is it better than it used to be? When this all started, I think people maybe initially weren't even thinking about hackers to the extent that they are today and people trying to get in and these attacks happening. Is it any better now?
Well, I think it's probably not, I would say, because we're connecting more and more devices to networks. We have more and more individuals who are participating in these hacking activities. The tools are much easier now than they were in the past. So in the past, in the 80s and early 90s, you had to be very skilled to carry out an attack. You had to know kind of how networks and protocols functioned on the network. Nowadays, there are a lot of tools out there that are pre-made. I call them point-and-shoot hacking tools, where you can download a tool and point it at a network or a system that you want to go after and say, go. And without much knowledge of what's going on under the hood, you can, get into some vulnerable systems. So if you're looking to attack a specific target, you still need those high-end skills. But there's a lot of vulnerabilities out there that these point-and-shoot hacking tools can infiltrate.
I agree with Mark. I'd go even sort of one step further. It's not only not better, but the trend line is, I think, getting worse. That we continually emphasize convenience, customizable convenience, the way I put it, over security.
Give me an example of what you mean.
Do I really need to be able to start my car through my mobile phone from halfway around the world? I mean, everybody remember that Super Bowl ad that was out last year, right? But what that reveals is an interconnectivity, right, through a system. And I'm using a device, this handheld mobile device, that has very little security built into it. Right. So it's, hackers right now can come and take over my phone fairly easily, with a little bit of mistake on my part of downloading a virus or an app that allows them to take over the phone. But we continue to make that choice, right, and emphasizing market convenience, access, with no discussion about what that's exposing.
Right? Because we all want to be the Jetsons? I mean, is that...
Yeah, I think two things, and Mark has a much better technical background than I on this from a policy standpoint, but from a policy standpoint, right, where did this start? It was a government program, the ARPANET, to rethink communication, right, in the aftermath of a nuclear attack. The whole point of it was access, was open access. It was never built to do what it's doing, what we're expecting, what we now take for granted as this major infrastructure for not only communication and, what we know on the internet, but running industrial systems remotely, which exposes, water treatment plants and infrastructure like that, that we never had exposure for before.
And if you look at companies, really investing in cybersecurity defenses is expensive. It costs a lot of money. It doesn't generate any revenue. And so it's really something that a lot of companies don't want to put their money into from the start. They don't want to, worry about their take that long view. They're worried about what can bring us the revenue right now. And certainly investing money in cybersecurity doesn't help their revenue and their bottom line unless they're a company that specifically consults in that area.
Are people worried enough about it, though, that can help sell something if they know there's extra super security in there? This particular item is less likely to cause hacking?
I think perhaps to some extent, but there's always a line there. So many of us online, we readily click the accept terms of agreement on software that we download or services that we use. And we say, hey, I want this for free. I want to be able to use this. And sometimes we get upset and we have to pay even a dollar or two for something. So, you know, for some people, maybe that's there, that they'll pay the extra for the security. But for the vast number of us, it's just not there yet. We don't see it kind of invading our lives on a day-to-day basis.
Well, you know, everybody does do that, click that, accept the terms of agreement. Is that right. making us more vulnerable when we do that?
Well, it on the issue of, say, privacy, it certainly tends to reduce your privacy. And there's a distinction between privacy and security, right? But why are you getting these apps for free, right? Well, it's because they're getting something else. They're getting your data, right? And we might be okay with giving that data up and that for the convenience of this. But you then are reliant upon wherever that data is going, that it's being held in a secure fashion, right? Have you investigated that? Do you know that? So you're trading off personal information and you basically just have faith that it's going to be treated in a secure fashion.
With the large companies and the government entities, are they concerned about it or are they just sort of plodding ahead?
I think the large companies and the government certainly are concerned about it, and they're investing a lot of money. And we have a lot of corporate partners at the University of Cincinnati where we're investigating cybersecurity issues where they are very concerned about cybersecurity, and they are investing money into it. I think perhaps it's more the midsize or the smaller companies that have a tighter bottom line, and they really have to make these decisions. And sometimes they don't have the expertise in house to know if their systems and networks are secure as they need to be.
You know, if you look at major pronouncements by President Obama, then Secretary of Defense Panetta, at the federal level, there's deep concern, right, of the degree of vulnerability that our systems have, both on the public side and the private side. But we have not been able to pass any major cybersecurity legislation through even the U.S. Senate, and the House has done some minor things. At the state level, the Ohio General Assembly actually passed a bill last year to create a Cybersecurity Education and Economic Development Council to start to develop a cybersecurity strategy for the state that includes a recognition that we need to educate the public better, that we need to create pathways for people to have careers in cybersecurity. So even if, Marianne, we could wave a wand tomorrow and know what the best way to secure things was, we don't have enough people with the technical and policy skills to actually implement that. So we need to integrate into this the development of, from an economic development standpoint, more companies investing in it from a university and community college level, more programs that enable students to earn advanced degrees in this, and then generating a K-12 educational system that makes people aware of this. This is now, this is the ether of the 21st century. It's not just our base infrastructure, right? It is, in fact, the space that we live in. And just as we had taken protocols back over the 50s as the automobile became ubiquitous, right, and we learned how to manage it as a more safe piece of technology, we need to start to evolve. We're very early into this internet age, right? But yeah, we need to start to figure out how to educate folks and sustain that over time. And have a more secure system.
And there is some of that. I mean, there one ways that companies can test out their security is to do what we call penetration testing, which basically is having internal IT employees or consultants do hacking on their systems and networks to see how vulnerable they are. And there are some industries where there is regulation where they have to go through penetration testing once a year. And primarily, we're talking about financial industries here. And so there are some industries where there is some regulation that requires some level of cybersecurity awareness and testing of their networks and systems.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation, or email us talk@wvxu.org. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter. You talk about the importance, Richard, of getting a degree and having more students in college now really working to help combat this problem. How many of those that you educate do you worry go out and become the hackers?
I actually don't have that much of a worry about that because, in fact,
so you're not educating them to do foul there.
Well, Mark and I actually ran a fairly unique course. We combined as a political scientist and an information technology professor. We had an advanced course this past winter in which the goal was for the students to develop an offensive attack on a any site. You know, so we had some financial institutions. We had some critical infrastructure. The idea behind that, of course, was not to teach them how to hack, but you can't effectively defend if you don't know how and think innovatively about how you could be attacked. Right. And to understand the vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. So, as Mark said, there's enough out there in the free space to develop your hacking skills without having a college degree.
And actually, in our information technology degree, we do teach those penetration testing or hacking skills to the students with the understanding that if you use these to hack, it could really mean the end of their career. And I'm actually starting to do some research to look into hacking activities by university students in the past and currently. And some of the initial things are starting to show that students are starting to see this as a career, and then they wane from doing any of the more aggressive hacking.
Do these cyber threats come mostly from within the United States or from other countries?
I mean, I think the better way to think about it is it's a global problem, right? And in fact, that's one of the complications behind it, right? That borders really don't matter. Where the borders become complicated or a complicating factor is through law enforcement, right? So if, say, I'm in pick your country, right? Let's say Russia, and I make an attack by using a server in South Korea to attack, a site in Great Britain. Even if I were able to identify who was behind that, how do I jurisdictionally start to deal with that kind of act, that criminal act, from a law enforcement problem? So borders are complicating in that sense on the defense side, on the security side. But from an offensive side, they really are non-existent. And so we think about this from a global standpoint. The question then becomes, how do you change these sort of where are the threat categories, right? And I tend to like to think about outcomes rather than sources. We always tend to think about sources in most of our security strategies. So what kind of outcomes do we want to prevent, and what kind of security systems do we need? So there's individual level outcomes, right? Identity theft that we want to sort of reduce. There's criminal activity, fraud, money laundering, you know, things of this nature. And then on the national scale, right, war, right, acts of war. So how do you design security things to deal with those different types of outcomes from attacks?
We're talking today about cybersecurity, and we'd like to hear from you, too. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, emailing us, talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition.